This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, professor of television studies at Rowan University. Now, we're going to remember Jenna Rollins, the actress best known for collaborating with her husband, director John Cassavetes. Their independent films, made in the 1970s and 80s, were often raw and improvised. Rollins died last week at the age of 94. She played a housewife having a nervous breakdown in A Woman Under the Influence, a prostitute in Faces, and a former gangster's moll in Gloria. She was nominated for a Best Actress Oscar for two of those dramatic performances. But her film debut was in the 1958 comedy The High Cost of Loving, playing the wife of José Ferrer. Here's a scene in which the two are eating breakfast. He's just read something out loud from the newspaper. Now it's her turn to read from the paper. She's trying to let him know she's pregnant, but he's not getting it.
Page one, my section. Mr. and Mrs. Jim Fry, after 9 years of marriage, proudly announced that a new baby appears to be on the way.
Imagine that.
Imagine what?
What you just read.
What did I just read?
About those people getting married.
I didn't say that. I said after 9 years of marriage, a baby. A B-A-B-Y, baby.
Here's another clip. Jenna Rollins is in the 1974 film A Woman Under the Influence. She plays a suburban housewife with three kids, and she's having an emotional breakdown. She's become hysterical, and her husband, played by Peter Falk, slaps and then hugs her.
You're going to be committed. Go to the hospital until you get better.
I'm not sore at you. I mean, you hit me. You never did that before. I didn't feel that, if that's what you feel bad about. I always understood you, and you always understood me, and it was always just how it was, and that's it. Till death do us part, Nick, you said it. Remember, he said, do you, Mabel Mortensen, take this man? I do, Nick. I do. Remember, I said, it's going to work because I'm already pregnant.
Don't let that mind run away on you now.
Do you remember how you laughed?
Don't, Mabel.
Nick, you laughed. Don't you remember? And he was so mad as a big toad.
Don't do that.
Hey, don't be sad. I know you love me.
In the 1980 film Gloria, Rollins plays a woman who had been connected to the mafia. She's asked by neighbors who know that they're about to be executed by the mob to take care of their 6-year-old son. But the mob wants the boy because his parents have given him the book they kept on mafia business. Gloria doesn't have maternal feelings. In this scene, she's on the street and is trying to ditch the kid when a car full of mobsters pulls up. She's carrying a gun in her purse.
Gloria.
Yes?
You know, we're not interested in you. All we want is the book and the kid. Do you understand?
Sure.
Gloria, why don't you take a walk? We'll take care of that kid. You got that book, kid? Come here.
Hey, Frank. What are you going to do? Shoot a 6-year-old Puerto Rican kid on the street? You don't know nothing. He don't even speak English.
That isn't the last time in the film she opens fire on the mobsters and gets away with it, by the way. Terry talked with Jenna Rollins in 1996.
Gloria was, in a way, really out of character film for you. It's an action film in a way, and you're pretty handy with a gun in the film. Not your typical role. Did you enjoy that change of pace?
I loved it. It was such a fantasy. I mean, here I am, and I'm going to take on the whole mafia and beat them. You know, it's just a sort of an incredible power trip.
While being very motherly at the same time.
While being very motherly at the time. But I remember it was so strange carrying that gun at first. And then after a while, because I always carried it in my purse, so I could shoot through the purse if I needed to. Glory, I'm speaking of, not me. And then afterwards, I was carrying the purse, because, you know, the prop man comes and takes it from you so there won't be an accident or anything at every occasion. And then all of a sudden, my purse would seem very light. And I thought, my, you get used to things very quickly. It was, the whole thing was, and it was a tough picture physically because I was running around those 4-inch heels, sandals, and carrying the child over my shoulder and running through Harlem in, you know, 98 degrees heat and 1,000 humidity or something. So that it was a picture you got into shape very quickly.
A Woman Under the Influence, directed by your late husband, John Cassavetes. You played a woman married to a character played by Peter Falk. And you're having a nervous breakdown, and you just, like, unravel more and more as the movie goes on. Had you seen somebody going through that before taking on the role, somebody who you could think about while doing the movie?
Not one person. You know, I wasn't thinking of one person. A part is like reading a detective story. You don't write it, you don't start it in the middle, you interpret it. And very often you find things that they're doing, the character that you're doing, that puzzles you. And you wonder how and why. And so you take as much of, because I believe that all of us have every quality, all of us. It's a matter of degree. And acting is a matter of increasing the degree or decreasing. But it's always there, and you can always find it inside of you. And think about things that you've seen and heard and people you've known, and all you need is just a little bit. It can be like a little piece of rice. But once you have the feeling, then you can enlarge and take it where you wish to.
You and your late husband, John Cassavetes, were making independent films before I think there was even a name for it. I mean, you were really pioneers of that in the movie industry. Why did you start? Why did you start finding your own little niche away from the larger industry?
Well, of course, as you say, you don't think of yourself as a pioneer or even, you don't think of yourself in any particular way. It's just that you want to express a different kind of story, a different kind of... We felt that there's so much more that could be said on film, and that films could be much more personal to the audience. That you could do pictures that were actually something that people would relate to because it was in their own lives. Because all of them really essentially are about love and. The loss of love, or how to survive love, or how to find love, or how to keep love, or you know, what you do with it, which is really the eternal problem for all of us. And we thought it could be shown in a more natural setting, a more accessible way, rather than just say an action film or
a glamorous escape film,
but. It's not that we wanted them to stop doing that kind of film. We just felt that there was a lot of room for a lot of kinds of film.
Could you describe a little bit about what the guidelines for improvisation were within the films that you made with John Cassavetes? How much improvisation was there? What were the parameters for that?
The first film that he made, Shadows, was entirely improvised. I wasn't in that. And so then... He did develop a reputation from that as doing everything improvisationally, but actually after that he always had a script, and not just a thrown together script, a real script. But then when we would have, if you'd have a problem with a scene, or John's theory was that if he got a bunch of good actors together and there was a problem, that it was the writer's problem. So then we would stop and we'd talk about it, rehearse, improvise, work about it as much as we needed to. And then when we thought we had it, he'd go in and sit down and write the scene from the improvisation the way he wanted it. And that's how we did most of them. Not all of them. There were lots of improvisations all the way through to the last films that we made. But mainly they were very scripted.
And so even the parts that were improvised, by the time you did the final take, it had been scripted based on the improvisation.
Mostly. I was thinking of one that is just the opposite of that. In our last picture, Love Streams, I played a woman who loved too much, loved her husband too much, loved her children too much. I did everything too much. She just drove everybody crazy with her excessiveness. It says in the script that she calls the husband home from a business meeting and the child home from school because she knows that they are not getting enough fun out of life. So they come home thinking something important is happening. And then there's just this one little sentence, really. And it said, they come home and sit down, she makes them laugh. And I said, what does that mean, John? And how does she make them laugh? He said, don't worry about it. He said, I've got something great planned. You're going to love it. And I said, well, but do you have any hints or anything? He said, no. He said, I don't want to ruin it for you. He said, just wait. And I said, this is making me hysterical. And he said, no, I'm telling you. He said, I don't want to even give it away. So we got to the day that we were going to shoot, and he says, stay in the dressing room. I don't want you to see the preparations. And I really was truly hysterical. And finally he came and said, okay, he said, now come on out. And we were shooting in the backyard of this beautiful home, and there was Seymour Cassell and Risa Blewett, who were playing my husband and child, and they're both sitting there. And they had a long picnic table, and on top of the picnic table there were about 100 of those, you know, those crazy little games that you see, you know, those clattering, chattering false teeth and eyes that pop out on springs and catch your bottles that look like they're getting stuff all over you, all that terrible, those joke store games. And John said, there, what do you think? I said, what do you mean, what do I think? Well, what am I supposed to do here? He said, make them laugh. I said, with these, I said, which ones? He said, all of them. He said, we've got a minute to shoot it. He said, and use every one, make them laugh, and then go jump off the diving board into the pool. So I said, well, shall we rehearse? He said, no. He said, I don't want to ruin the spontaneity of it. He said, okay, roll them. And so I just wildly started, you know, with the eyes and the ketchup and the thing. And of course, he had already told them not to laugh because in their characters, they were not amused that they'd been brought home, you know. And so now I got wilder and wilder, trying, you know, just anything to. And finally, the minute had gone by and I went and jumped off the diving board. Then, of course, I realized why I was jumping off the diving board, because he had it planned that they weren't going to laugh. Now, that kind of improvisation was quite rare, because there was no rehearsal, there was no talking, there was nothing. It was just, you just went for it. And it, you know, he was right. It was more fun to do that scene. It's when I look back on it with a lot of happiness.